AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Are you ready? It's Saturday morning at Yahoo Sports Radio. Welcome to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, featuring Bill Harmon and powered by Insperity.
Insperity, inspiring small business performance.
The golf doctor Charlie Epps is in. The man who coaches PGA stud Angel Cabrera.
Follow the golf doctor on Twitter at @thegolf_doctor.
Doctor, the golf doctor is in on Yahoo Sports Radio right now with Charlie Epps. Here's your host from the Quicken Loans studios of Yahoo Sports Radio. It's our very own scratch golfer, sort of.
Hey, I should have stayed home and played with myself.
John Granato.
Good Open Championship morning, everybody. John Granato, Charlie Epps, and Billy Harmon all together in studio in the Gow Building right here in Houston, Texas. Welcome in. Hey, guys.
Hello, John. How you doing?
We are doing great. Charlie, how are you doing?
You know, it's good to see your tan.
Yeah. Well, we had a good time on the water
last week.
We were at Gulf Shores.
Gulf Shores?
Yeah. A lot of fun. We go, it's right on the Florida-Alabama border. Beautiful.
Florabama.
Yep, the Florabama. Yeah. We sure did. We sure hit that.
I've been there before.
Oh, yeah. We hit that quite a bit, Bill.
How about Charlie got a new job?
How about this? How about Charlie? Congratulations.
Going back to Redstone.
Charlie, is there any club in Houston that you haven't been the pro?
He's got his picture on the wall at every club.
Any club in Houston that you're not an honorary member at yet?
You know, but what's funny about that is the site where Redstone is, or the Golf Club of Houston,
mm-hmm.
was the original golf course was El Dorado. And the first golf course I played when I came to Houston for a 5-tournament mini tour series was El Dorado.
Wow.
So everything goes full circle. But Mike McGettrick has opened up his golf academy at the Golf Club of Houston. And over the last few months, we've been talking back and forth, and he welcomed me to be able to go out there and teach the people that I teach and do a few programs. So I'm happy. I'm not traveling, although I thought it was really kind of neat that the first tournament I'm haven't traveled with Angel in about 4 years.
Well,
the first day he leads it.
John and I were not going to bring that up. I'm sure you were that. I wasn't anyway.
I've already brought it up in a few texts to Charlie.
And I got quite a few texts, but all I got to say is I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
Yes. In 1988, when I left the tour cutting for Jay and I went back to work for my brother Craig at Oak Hill Country Club, his very first tournament, Jay won the Houston Open here with Gypsy Joe Grillo on the bag. I said, boy, he really misses me.
Well, and we were talking about it beforehand. I was watching the Barbasol. All the guys that aren't at the Open Championship are playing the Barbasol. Angel leads with 6-under in the first round. Walks back the next day, he's down 11.
Unbelievable.
I got to tell a story. There's a kid named Rick Forrester. His dad was mm-hmm. a famous golf professional, Dick Forrester, mm-hmm. and Rick was a golf professional. And he really was responsible for bringing Johnny Vegas to Houston and getting him situated with English and got him to, you know, University of Texas. And it's kind of like his grandfather, you know, and helping him. And so we were talking 2 days ago, and Rick was telling, you know, these guys are just so hard-headed. I've been trying to help Johnny Vegas with his chipping, and I mean, I don't know what the heck he's going to do. He should be over at the British Open, and I called him yesterday and said, John, I said, Rick, how about that 60 that he just put on? I guess his chipping was bad. He said, well, he hit every green.
He didn't have the chip. Yeah.
But what a round of golf.
How about that? 60, Johnny Vegas in the second round at Barbasol. And he was 17 under while Angel hadn't teed off yet. He's 6 under, first round leader, down 11. But that's the other tournament. How about this one so far, guys? Your impressions from the first couple of rounds of the Open?
Well, I think Phil has been so great, and he adds so much to an event when he's in it. I think he's certainly the most resilient player of our generation. He's had so many difficult defeats. He comes back relentlessly. The putt was in for 62. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely in the middle of the hole. And he comes back, and I thought he played very well the second day. I think, you know, just looking at the conditions, I would think you'd have to give Stenson an awfully good chance to contend with him this weekend.
I'm watching with guys that don't like. I'm watching guys that don't like Phil. Charlie, you've been out there plenty with Phil. Bill, Charlie, you've been out there plenty with Phil. That famous line about his fake smile and everything else. Tell us about Phil.
I think Phil is a great human being, great family man, great father, great husband, and a superior golfer that won a professional tournament as an amateur, was great junior golfer. A little controversial every now and then. He'll speak his mind every now and then, and he'll misspeak. But I think overall, 40 tournament wins, 6 majors or 5 majors. I don't see how you can criticize.
What about the guy?
You know, I've never hung with him. I mean,
I have.
You know,
yeah.
At the President's Cup, I've been on. Caddied in Ryder Cups and President's Cup, where he was on the team. I was one of Jay Haas's minions over in South Korea. For some reason, Phil and Amy sat at the same table back at the team room at the hotel maybe 3 or 4 times with me at dinner with Freddie and his girlfriend. I couldn't tell you how great he was. And his energy, and he still has a childlike passion for the game. He's incredibly generous. He's incredibly thoughtful. He's a giver, not a taker. You know, whether he's a phony or not, he does stand there for hours and sign those autographs. And maybe some of these young guys should take note of that and look at the way he handles himself. Nobody wants to sign him, by the way.
Yeah.
But he still does. And so to call him a phony to do it, I think, is a little disingenuous, and I think it's not correct. No one called Arnold a phony when he signed all of them. They told you how great he was. So I look at Phil a little bit as the modern-day Arnold Palmer, the way he handles himself.
The way he plays.
He goes for it. He's not afraid to lose. All he cares about is winning. I think he's fantastic and fantastic for the game, just fantastic.
I thought it was neat what he wanted to pitch for the Mud Hens.
When he found out his fastball was only 67, didn't work real good, did it?
Maybe you should stick to golf. He's what a great 2 rounds. And you said, as you said, the 62, and he said he wanted to shed a tear when that didn't go, and how that didn't go down, I have no idea. How many times have we seen that putt over and over again? How does it stay out?
The golf gods.
No
62s.
No 62. We won't have a 62.
See, but I like the fact that he owned up to how much it meant to him. Yeah, it wasn't like I didn't know how many under par I was. I was in the zone. He knew what he was doing. He knew what he wanted. He was responsible for that. And he ended up hitting a heck of a putt that just didn't go in.
Yeah.
And in defeat, he's always owned up to it.
Always.
Yep.
You know, the worst, you know, loss, I would say, would be at Wingfoot.
Yeah.
You know.
Doesn't get any worse than that. I don't care who you are.
And so he's a good guy. He's good for the game, and I'm happy for him. And Angel was one of the guys that didn't care for him because he always said hello to me. He never said hello to Angel.
Oh, well. Everybody's got their perspective. You were right next to Angel, and you liked him, and he didn't. we're towards the end of the our first round here on the show. So, Phil, right there, Stenson, the way he's played so far, Bill.
Well, he's got such a penetrating ball flight. I think in this weather, I look at him as the favorite right now. I really do. He hits that 3 wood so straight. His irons don't curve. I don't know, he grips a club like it's not going to move in his hand. A little bit like Blaine McAllister would grip that club and it looked like it was in a vice. The club isn't twisting around.
No,
so I think
– no face rotation.
If I had to pick a winner, I would have to pick Stenson right now. I'm rooting for Phil, although I think Henrik Stenson's a very good guy. The times I've been around him, I like him a lot. But I think he's a favorite.
The hardest nine holes in golf if the wind is against you coming in. And it's going to be hard to close if you're in the last two groups. Somebody will get hot from –
posting
know,
score.
Yeah, somebody's going to post something.
Like Justin Leonard did. So,
did Tom Watson posted the score. Nick Price bogeyed three of the last five.
That's right. So
back in 82.
It's going to be a great, great British Open, or the great
Open. You better not say that because if Bruce hears it,
Bruce.
Holy crap.
He'll be texting us shortly.
if it hadn't been for Arnold Palmer, nobody would be playing in it today.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you, Bruce, that was Charlie that said the British Open, okay? Not me, just so you know. All right, we're one in. We got three rounds to go here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, brought to you by Insperity.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, featuring Bill Harmon on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com. Powered by Insperity. Insperity, inspiring small business performance. Once again with the Golf Doctor, here's your host, John Granato.
All right, back here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, brought to you by Insperity, inspiring business performance right here.
The
Sports Radio Network. Yeah. Now, speaking of the boss, who's the boss here? The HGA.
Charlie.
See, it's my show. I can talk about whoever I want.
Go for it, Charlie.
But yesterday I had a great round of golf at the old Houston Country Club on the Wayside, established in 1908. I walked the fairways with Bobby Jones and Howard Hughes, and it's where, you know, golf started in Houston.
Were you the pro there back
then?
Yes,
he was. For 50 years.
You're so funny, Billy. No. So I took my good friend Rufus Wallingford, and we played in an outing. And I got to congratulate the Houston Golf Association. Not only do they put on a great tour event, not only do they have a great junior golf program, not only do they have a great first tee program, they are renovating and bringing golf back to Houston on a more economical basis and having a municipal golf course that people can afford. They've reconditioned it. They have a great plan. They've raised almost $6 million to push this forward. And that's on top of all their other responsibilities. So my hat's off to Steve Timms, who really has a vision. And, you know, this past week, Rory came out and said that it wasn't his job to promote the game of golf. He got in it to play it, and I agree with him. I think he promotes the game by being a great player and getting the game on the sports page. But it's organizations like the Houston Golf Association that promote the game of golf, and it's by – they have 225 members that work their butts off. And I just wanted to congratulate.
And it's a mostly all volunteer work.
Yes.
And so for them to put their time into it and giving back to the game, it's awesome. It really is.
I mean, they're growing the game here in Houston. Yeah. So, Steve and guys, congratulations.
All right, you mentioned it now. Your guys' impressions it overshadowed, obviously. Monday was a big day talking about the Olympics. The way Jordan went about it, the way that Rory went about it, Bill.
Well, you know, Rory does do a lot to promote the game. He has junior programs in Ireland. I thought, you know, looking back on it, did he have to say that the Olympics are not important and I'm going to watch some of the important events? I thought that was an interesting thing to say. I would have followed up a question, well, if your countrymen were having a chance to win the gold medal, you wouldn't watch them and root for your, you know, the people that took your place. He seemed to have an edge that day, you know, up at the mic. I think he's tired of answering the questions. I have it on pretty good sources that the main reason these guys aren't going over there, Zika fell in their hands as a great excuse. It's security.
Mm-hmm.
And the Olympics has been, since day one, pretty much bollocks, it seems like to me. And I think the Olympic Committee's got to take some of the heat for some of these people pulling out and everything because – if you're going to go to the Olympics and don't feel that you can be protected, that's a pretty odd feeling to have. So I thought he was a little harsh about the Olympics, and it's not important, and swimming is more important than golf. But I think he was tired. I thought he had some kind of edge going. He just seemed to be upset, a little uptight. And, you know, but he didn't back off it.
I'm going to bring something up that he brought up that I think, I don't know, take it for what it is. He said, I could do HGH every single day.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't know. That's how bad the testing is here. There are a lot of golfers that aren't going right now. The list is pretty long of golfers that aren't going. And I would bet you guys that there's a, I don't know what percentage it is, but some guys aren't going because the Olympic testing is a lot more stringent than what they're facing right now.
I've heard that too, John.
It's blood testing.
Yeah, I've heard that too, that's a concern with some of the players. But they've known the Olympics is going to be here for quite a few years if they wanted
right.
to.
Right.
You know, the press has a habit of putting a guilt trip on people. If they don't want to go, they don't have to go.
I don't care if they go.
You know, that's their choice. And
I am hoping, though, that the event goes off smoothly and that the golf is great and that the guys that didn't go watched it and say, boy, geez, that really looked like they were having a blast there at the opening ceremonies. Maybe I should have gone.
Well, there's one event, though, I would say the cops are asking for gas money because they don't have enough money.
Oh, no, it's awful.
It has the potential to be horrific.
Yes, it does.
And I got to tell you, if there's one Olympic event that I don't think with the protesting, with the crime in there, the poverty, with everything that's going on in the world right now, this is the one Olympics that I would probably say I can't blame you guys.
Well, you know, the other sports that have to go into the water of the bays
they're
Rio
gonna be,
de Janeiro.
They're going to be rowing through beer cans and whatever.
Body parts.
Yeah,
and I think the other thing is that the golfers have four majors a year, maybe five with the players. This is a once every 4 years for all the other sports, basically. The golfers will have 16 basically Olympics in those 4 years, the four majors. And if you want, I always throw the players in because I believe it's a major tournament.
And plus the Ryder Cup and
the
President's
Cup. So I think they have their Olympic gold medals four times a year. So I understand that it's different for them than it is the swimmers or the track people. They have once every 4 years. They work their tail off for that one moment. It's a kind of a jumbled up situation, I think. Complicated by how ridiculous things are down there in Rio de Janeiro.
Well, to me, Olympics is the 100-meter.
Yeah, the mile.
Yeah.
And the,
you know, or seeing the guy come in the stadium that's running the marathon.
For the most part, that's the only time you see those guys is every 4 years.
And the swimming and
the
stuff
gymnast
like that.
And yep. Right.
Yep, the gymnast.
When they have the Winter Olympics and the NHL players play, the NHL closes down for 2 weeks.
Yeah, right.
So maybe if they wanted to really promote golf, they should have just had no tournaments for a couple weeks and highlight the Olympics.
And interesting, Jordan say he will not defend his title at the John Deere that week.
Yeah. That was
very interesting.
Well, but I think Jordan
said he didn't think it would be right.
It would be right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go and play for money when I'm not going to play for my country.
Yeah, no, I thought, but a painful decision, I'm sure, because, you know, I think the John Deere gave him an exemption when he won that first tournament and stuff like that. And he's such a great kid. I'm sure he's struggled with this more than some other people.
Well, he's struggling as well. He was playing really, really well. And then what happened, Bill?
Well, you know, I've said this on this show from day one. The year that he had last year will probably never be duplicated, but his expectation, I'm sure, is that he can do it, and all the fans and the press think he can do it. I just don't think it's possible to do that again. And unfortunately, or fortunately, the reason he's great is he does put that pressure on himself, and he does think he can do it. But it seems to me that he's really fighting himself more than his golf game these days, Charlie. He was very, very animated this morning after being 4-under through 8, missing a couple short putts. He looked like he was just ready to explode, and eventually he did explode. So I think he's fighting himself really more than his golf game.
You just got to watch out for anger.
Yeah, you do.
We've seen it out of him this year.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. He's got that standard, and if he's not playing to that standard now, but who can play? He can't keep that up,
Nobody
what he did last
can.
Year. No.
Nobody can.
Nope. All right. We're at the halfway point. All right. We made the cut. We're going to be – we got two rounds to go here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour.
Featuring Bill Harmon.
On Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Powered by Insperity.
Insperity. Inspiring small business performance. Once again with the Golf Doctor, here's your host, John Granato.
All right. 31 past the hour here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. Brought to you by Insperity, Inspiring Business Performance, and InternationalProAm.com.
December 5th through the 11th. Meet me in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. I'll buy you your first margarita. We'll play five rounds of golf on three beautiful golf courses. Stay at the beautiful Casa Magna Marriott. Great accommodations, great vista. And more importantly, the people that work at Casa Magna Marriott are so nice and so considerate. They'll make your stay just wonderful. Your wife will like it. You'll like it. Get yourself four amateurs, one PGA professional, and come and let Bill Sitton and his wife Jackie, who have run this event for 27 years, they raise money for junior golf. They have a scholarship in Billy Sitton's father's honor. It's a great, great week, great festivities, great parties. Everything's convenient, very, very safe. You land in Puerto Vallarta, you're only about 8 minutes from the hotel. You walk across the street to one of the golf courses, and then you go up on the hill overlooking the bay. So join me. Go on to PuertoVallartaProAm.com. Get all the information, and I will see you in Puerto Vallarta in December.
Charlie, how many players would the pro and the amateurs participate in that event?
We have 100 teams, so that's 500 people. Plus,
that's a lot of That's margaritas. Awesome.
That's exactly
be.
Right.
Yeah. You're down about $5,000 before you hit your first shot.
And then you have, 300 wives.
So okay, you're down $10,000 before you hit
it's
your,
at 800.
Before he makes his first double bogey, John.
Yeah. The tourism board love Billy and Jackie.
That's awesome.
Bring a lot of people. And now you not only – the good thing, too, is now Southwest flies there.
Oh, yeah?
So the airfares are reasonable.
Good.
And it's good time.
Good stuff. Puerto Vallarta is beautiful, and
perfect,
those golf courses are awesome.
Perfect weather.
Awesome. All right, let's talk about the Olympics, guys. Let's talk about the U.S. Open, the Women's Open, where we had more controversy. We had Dustin Johnson a couple of weeks ago where they didn't tell him that he had the penalty, even though they had made that decision. Now we've got Norquist with talk about it, Bill. What happened?
Well, in the playoff, they're having a three-hole playoff for aggregate score, and unbelievably, she grounded her club in a fairway bunker, which in this day and age, I think even putting your club that close to the sand, Charlie, was kind of hard to
That's
imagine.
That's questionable.
To be honest with you.
Yes.
And I guess they picked it up clearly on TV, but they allowed them to play the 17th hole, and then they hit their tee shots on 18. They hit their layup shots. Norquist, thinking that she's tied for the lead, played her wedge shot conservatively because the pin was right over the water, 25 feet past the hole, and they informed her at that time, and Brittany Lang, that she was getting a two-stroke penalty, which then allowed Brittany Lang to play her shot accordingly, but they didn't allow Norquist to play her shot, knowing that she's now two shots back. It gave Lang a very unfair advantage, in my opinion. So I think they bollocks that up again. Like, I think that they messed up the thing with Dustin Johnson. So it's hard to believe in their two biggest championships that they had this perfect storm with these rulings. And the way they handled both of them, I think, were highly questionable.
Yeah. And I've heard people say, it couldn't have happened to nicer people than the USGA. There's a bit of a rift between the PGA and the USGA, no?
The USGA, and I've had encounters with them in playing in major championship at the U.S. Open twice, and you get on the first tee, and the officials, because you're not a Nicklaus or a world-class player, they talk at you like, you're lucky to be here, so just get out of the way. And PJ Boatwright was really condescending in his conversation with my threesome. And I looked at the guys, and so he could hear it. I said, I wonder if he talks that way to Nicholas. You know, I mean, it's like officials want to call rules. And the rules are to help the game, and the rules officials are there to help the players, not sit there with a telescope and see if you make a piece of sand move. I think it's ridiculous. Let's just play the game.
You know, I've spent time with Mike Davis, and I find him very pleasant one-on-one. I've spent time with David Fay. I found him to be very pleasant one-on-one. Judy Bell, when she was a president.
She was delightful. Kick. Yes.
And so it's interesting because on a personal level, you know, you find that you kind of like them. And but these two rulings here, or how they handled them, is really highly questionable for the governing body of the game that we all love. And the tour officials, who it's their job to do it on a daily basis and a weekly basis, just have a better rapport with the players, I think.
Well, they respect the players.
And they know the players better. Yeah. They know the ones that are going to grind on them a little bit. And I very rarely have I heard a tour player really knock the PGA Tour officials. Really, it's not
you don't.
You just don't hear it. Yeah. So I think, by and large, that it's because they are professional rules officials, wouldn't you say, Charlie? That's their job. They do it every day, every week, mark off the courses, do all this stuff. They seem to have it much more together, especially when the heat's on and it's in the middle of a questionable call in the middle of a tournament. They seem to have a little bit better way of handling things.
You know, you either call a ruling and you advise all the players, and that's it. You just don't, you know.
Keep them guessing.
Right. You know. So be it.
That's another blemish on the USGA. We're out here right now, and I'm looking at the first page, and I'm seeing Bill Haas on the first page of the leaderboard. And you made an interesting comment about the way that Bill plays, and maybe it's great for this tournament.
Well, it could be helpful. Bill, by nature, is not an aggressive player, and when you play in windy conditions and tough conditions, you have to play a little smarter. Pars are golden in these situations, even on the easier holes. Let's say you par is your friend in a day like today. So his natural style of play, if he executes, could be good for the weekend. Big weekend for Bill. He's probably right on the cusp of the Ryder Cup points list. He's probably on Davis Love's short list of captain's picks. Davis saw how he finished the President's Cup, which has to be a plus, but I don't think if he doesn't play well in either the British or the Open or the PGA, or play pretty good in the FedEx Cup, I don't know if he can pick them. So I think these next 6 weeks are real big for Bill, and a good weekend could go a long ways to not only maybe getting accruing enough points to get on the team, but certainly if he plays good in this arena under this kind of pressure, it certainly will keep Davis looking at him.
What kind of wind player is he?
Fair, I would say. He's kind of one of these younger players that likes to full swing it by nature. But he does have the shots. I've noticed it on TV. He's been playing them more. His dad and I have talked to him quite a bit about knockdown shots. So we'll see. You know, it's going to be hard for everybody, and hopefully he can string together a bunch of pars and stay away from the big number.
If it is, and it looks to be, we've got weather guys are coming in and their parkas and their ski caps. we just saw Henrik Stenson coming in that way. Advantage to the Soren Gjelsten or the Henrik Stensons or the Sergio Garcias that have more experience over there, Charlie?
You would think, but it's the guy that wakes up Sunday morning and everything kind of goes right and he gets off to a good start. And all of these guys, I mean, Phil, I think, is of course, leading right now. But Keegan Bradley's interesting.
Yeah, he is.
Watch him play, and he's hit a lot of quality shots. And he hasn't won in a while. You know, he could be dangerous. I like Tony Finau.
Yeah,
big,
there you go.
Big hitter, huh?
Yeah, big hitter. Great kid, I understand. Got a little short swing, which might help him in the wind.
But the cold and you know, the Swedes have to have, you know, you know, that's their summer.
Yeah, well, yeah. Beautiful up there. It's balmy here now. J.B. Holmes is making a move today, everybody. He's 2 under. That's the best round out there today. So he's at 4 under for the tournament, 2 under today. So watch for J.B. Holmes. We got one to go. Our final round next on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour,
featuring Bill Harmon
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Powered by Insperity.
Insperity, inspiring small business performance. Once again with the Golf Doctor, here's your host, John Granato.
All right, our fourth and final round here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, brought to you by Insperity, inspiring business performance right here on the Yahoo Sports Radio Network. All right, guys, we're looking at that leaderboard. What sticks out for you guys as we head into the weekend?
I just know that that back nine is so hard, and it's the last guy to have a lead like that, Bobby Clampett, you know, he gave it up. You know, I hope that Phil hangs on, you know, but it's wide open.
It's wide open.
I mean, from 5 or 6 strokes back, you can win this tournament
Maybe even more with Dustin back there, too.
Yeah. I mean, these guys, this afternoon, it's going to play hard.
Yeah.
I mean, if they can shoot even par or one over, I think it's going to be a hell of a round.
Yeah, you almost have to look at how certain players flight the ball. I think Charlie and Zach Johnson's have got a penetrating flight. Yeah. Stenson, penetrating flight. Dustin Johnson's got that penetrating flight. But
Sergio Garcia.
Yeah, I really think, though, a lot depends on how Phil and Henrik play today. You know, if both of them play good, they might create a little separation between themselves and the guys in third, fourth, or fifth. So I still think it's their tournament, those two guys, if they play good today. But we'll probably see somebody shoot 68 and move up 40 spots, and a guy shoot 78 and move down in the tied for 60th when he was in the top five today. So I think the leaderboard will be volatile for sure today. But I look for the guys that I think Stenson, I like the Sergio. Zach Johnson seems to be in that little zone again. So I'll be very interested. I think the trump card is how is Phil going to handle today.
So you guys have both played and caddied there, and you know the golf course. What the first 7 holes? That's where everybody jumped out early, and they posted a score, and then they make that turn, and then they're coming home, and the wheels start to rattle a little bit. Why?
Wind and uneven lies. The fairways coming in have little moguls in them, and you get. Horrible bounces, but you get a downhill lie sometimes, or you get a little uphill lie into the wind, and the crosswind is, you know, the golf courses over there are, as we saw on Thursday, give up great rounds because if there's no wind, they're pretty easy. But you introduce that 20-mile-an-hour wind, Bill, and I guarantee, you know, it's...
Well, coming home, you can't fake it.
No.
Marginal shot will end up being sometimes 30 or 40 yards offline without a wind. It might have been on the right side of the green. So I think what happens is that puts a lot of pressure on the player on every swing. He knows that there's a double or triple lurking. If he doesn't flight the ball exactly the way he wants to and hits it in the middle of the club face. And I think eventually that just wears you down coming in. You're just kind of rope-a-dope in the back nine at Troon and hoping not to have a knockout punch delivered to you. So, once again, I think we go back to the guys who flush it, are comfortable knocking the ball down, and I think, more importantly, don't have a problem drawing it into those left or right winds coming in. But that's not easy to do. That's easy for us to talk about it here in studio. Not real easy to do when you're playing in the Open Championship.
What's so hard about 11?
Well, the blind tee shot, very narrow fairway. If you hit it to the left, you're going to have a lost ball. You can't play it. If you hit it to the right, you got the railroad, could be out of bounds. The tee shot, you can't see any of the fairway. And then the second shot, the out of bounds, is 5 yards to the right of the green. So, you know, with the wind blowing left or right, you lose that shot a little bit to the right. That's out of bounds. So, you know, 5 is really not a bad score in that hole.
No. Have you guys been on that hole when the train's coming by?
Oh, sure.
It's right next to you,
right
isn't
there.
It's right next to you.
It's there.
Going 100 miles an hour.
Zoom.
And you got to hit some golf shots with a train coming right next to you.
And a 747 flying right over your head on the ninth hole. That's very close to you, by the way.
I mean, you can touch
closest
the wheels.
You'll ever been to an airplane.
Where does this one rank, Royal Troon, as far as the Open Championship courses?
Well, it's one of the top three. I mean, especially with the wind, because that's what really controls the golf. You know, Muirfield,
St. Andrews.
St. Andrews, because of what it is, yeah. You know, and Troon. You know, Carnoustie has always had a, you know, a little stepchild deal, but that's the hardest one.
Is it?
You know, especially sometimes they set it up ridiculous, but Troon is a great, great golf course, and they voted to have women in.
They did. Good for them.
Yeah. I've only been to Troon, Muirfield, Carnoustie, and I think Royal Birkdale, where I've been, is a wonderful golf course. I agree with Charlie. There's very little charm to Carnoustie.
Yeah.
There's no charming holes there. Nor do I think they're necessarily unfair holes. They just have so many hard holes that just kind of beat on you. St. Andrews has charming holes. Muirfield is very good. Troon is very interesting because it's a tale of two nines. But I would put, for me, I would say Carnoustie would be the worst of the four that I went to.
Yep.
But Troon is a wonderful golf course.
Yeah, it is. And I haven't seen anybody, heard anybody talking it's unfair, or this is this hole, or anything like that. They've been nothing but praise this week for Royal Troon. But you see the wind now picking up 19, 20 miles an hour out there on certain. I mean, you're on one side of the course, it's blowing 20, and the other side, 10.
Very strange, isn't it?
It really is.
Very strange.
It really is. So, really, really neat. So, okay, you guys are looking at that leaderboard, and we talk about the way ball flight. Zach Johnson, pick a winner.
Keegan Bradley.
Stenson.
I'm going to say Zach repeats.
All right. How about that?
Zach
huh?
repeats.
I'm 0 for 75.
Yeah, I know. Too, I don't think I picked a winner yet. So,
hardest
sorry.
Sport in the world to pick a winner.
Sorry, Zach. I apologize for picking you. We will talk about it all next week right here on the Child Ups Golf Hour. Y'all have a great
Thanks,
golf
guys.
Week.
Thanks, Bill.